Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Everybody, what's up, and welcome into the Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast here on a Monday, and a Monday after what's been the craziest Sunday of the NFL season to date. We've got a lot to wrap up in this episode of the Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast. I am Michael Beller, joined as always by Jake Seely. Jake, what's up today, my friend?
Don't come to me first after Saquon Barkley yesterday. Come on.
Oh, I know. We're going to talk about plenty of Giants stuff today, and not a lot of it is going to be good, although some of it is pretty okay. Brandon Funston, how you doing today?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right for a Monday. Can't complain. But I was curious, why was it the most wildest week of the season so far? Is it the clear winner? Because I always come out every week thinking that things are crazy, you know?
Well, it was like an exciting, like, I feel like especially the last few weeks, I'll speak for myself, I guess. The last few weeks in most of my leagues, right, like most fantasy teams, their scores have come under projections, right? Seeing a lot of red ink on fantasy pages. And so that just, you know, leaves you with, you know, maybe a sour taste in your mouth. And then this week it's green all over the place. And we had the 47-42 Chargers-Browns game. You had a couple other teams putting up 40-plus. Craziness in Bengals and Packers that Jake just absolutely couldn't get enough of with all the missed field goals. It was just, I don't know, it just felt like a really fun day of football yesterday, maybe more so than any others.
He's writing big words, big letters.
No, I'm not. I was gonna say, were you hinting towards this, Funston? Am I? Oh wow, that's so much clearer. Oh. There you go. The band Kickers. I didn't have my shirt on.
Yeah, there it is.
Is that why you're saying it's the most craziest week? I mean, there was a lot of injuries, but yes, it was the most glorious band Kickers week of the entire history of forever.
It was. It really was. Extra points. I mean, even just become all the high degree of difficulty at extra
Bengals
points
and
is just crazy.
Yeah. It was, definitely.
See, it's so crazy. You guys can't even stop talking over yourselves. It was so crazy.
That's how excited we are. It was a great week for you, Jake. It was a great week for the Band Kickers brand, for sure. It was a great week for plenty of other people around the fantasy world, and maybe not so great a week for some others as well. And we're going to dig into all that. We're going to talk about some of the biggest news. We're going to talk about week 6 waivers. It's actually not a bad crop of waiver wire players to be going after this week. We're going to talk about some buys and some sells, and that's what we're going to get into on this episode of the Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast. I want to go back to Thursday for our first topic of the week. You guys, Russell Wilson's going to be out anywhere between 4 and 8 weeks because of that finger injury. Brandon, we'll start with you on this one. What do we think of a Russless Seahawks offense going forward?
I don't know. I guess they're going to probably try to run a similar version of the offense and just hope that Geno can, you know, manage that. I think just in who it impacts, I mean, you could just go straight from the context of Thursday night where, you know, Tyler Lockett was 1 for 4 on targets from Geno Smith for 7 yards, and one of the passes was intercepted. Obviously, he fell down. That was the last pass he had of the game. But, I mean, DK looked pretty good. 3 for 3 on targets from Geno for 54 yards. I kind of feel like, if I'm imagining who's going to get hurt the most, is Tyler Lockett, just because Russ and him have like this innate sense with each other and this crazy timing, and DK is just the easier guy to complete passes to if you're just thinking about it in a vacuum. So to me, I'd be a little bit worried about Tyler Lockett, maybe not so much about DK.
Pretty much the same, copy-paste, not much to add to that. And maybe a little bit of hit in the run game, but we still don't know if Chris Carson's back or not and right. How much now Alex Collins is going to command. So it just seems to be like a messy offense outside of DK Metcalf right now.
Yeah, it's definitely one that's going to have that sort of pattern, and you know, everyone gets a little bit of a downgrade. Obviously, we'll see what this looks like with Geno Smith, but not good news coming out of Seattle with Russell Wilson going to be missing significant time. I want to take a look at the Bengals and Packers game for a second here too, you guys. That was one of the more fun games, the Packers coming away with a 25-22 victory with all those missed kicks. Mason Crosby finally delivering with the game-winning field goal in overtime. But the guy who I want to talk about first on this game is A.J. Dillon, because he had a box score impact, certainly, and he had 4 catches and turned one of those into a receiving touchdown. but he ran just 10 routes. The snap percentage was about the same as it's been for him the first few weeks of the season. And Aaron Jones went over 100 yards rushing. So, Jake, I mean, you look at A.J. Dillon and you look at the box score, it's impressive, but is it just sort of the same story or is he becoming a thing?
It's the same story at the beginning of the season. Preston is smiling because I was smiling because this is the anti-Aaron Jones. Like, this is what I said of why I'm the Aaron Jones haters. Oh, I hate Aaron Jones. No, it's just Aaron Jones is no different than, honestly, like Tyler Lockett. You're going to get 30-point games, and then no, he's not because he still gets 6, 7, 8-point games mixed in there. He got the 100 yards yesterday, but it could have been a 30-point game if he wasn't sharing. It's just the fact that this team has never treated him like a bell cow. If he got 20 touches, if he got a Zeke workload, if he got a Dalvin Cook workload before his injury, if he got those kind of workloads, I'd say smash top five running back. Not even a question in my mind. So A.J. Dillon's a thing, but he's no more a thing than Tony Pollard or, you know, those kind of running backs where you probably can get flex value a lot of weeks, but you have to understand that their floor is also really low too, because if it is an Aaron Jones just going ham week, A.J. Dillon might only get 5 touches. That's the risk. You know, if Ezekiel Elliott's going bananas, Tony Pollard just might not get involved 1 week. So I think comparing A.J. Dillon and Aaron Jones are kind of like the lesser version of Ezekiel Elliott, Tony Pollard, but not by that big of a margin, but they're the lesser version of them.
I mean, I don't know if I have anything to add to that. I mean, I'm whatever. I mean,
nothing to add, so he freezes.
Whatever. I froze, but Aaron Jones is right where I expect him to be. He's like wide receiver, RB5, RB6. I mean, he's doing it with the workload he always gets, and he always finishes like right around there. So I don't know. There's nothing to see here. Move on, I guess, is what I would say.
All right, yeah, A.J. Dillon, I mean, I think we're all on the same page then, because it was a decent little performance from A.J. Dillon, right? You're going to have people talking about him. 79 yards on 12 touches plus the receiving touchdown. So he's going to be someone who I think gets brought up as a potential starter in week 6, especially with the bye starting. But this feels like something that's a little bit more descriptive of his week 5 performance than predictive of what is to come for A.J. Dillon. On the other side of this game, you know, Tyler Boyd was a bit of a ghost in this one. Did not really live up to the expectations he had set for himself the previous couple of weeks. Got 5 targets, caught 4 of them for 24 yards. And you know, the big news for him, obviously, is that T. Higgins was back in the lineup for the Bengals. And he didn't do too much himself, 5 catches for 32 yards. But now we're looking, once again, it feels like, at a situation where when all 3 of these guys are healthy, Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins are the more bankable ones, and Tyler Boyd is going to be up and down. Brandon, are we downgrading his outlook for the rest of the season based on the fact that when all 3 guys are healthy, he seems to be the 3rd out of 3?
I don't know. I mean, Tyler Boyd is wide receiver 36 and half PPR. I mean, I'm thinking back to where I ranked him to start the season. It was like 32, 33. He's doing Tyler Boyd things. I mean, he's averaging 7 targets per week. Some weeks it's a little bit more, some weeks it's a little bit less, and that's kind of what you get. And I think there'll be weeks when, you know, T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase are more taken away by the defense and they'll lean in on Tyler Boyd. I think you're getting a Tyler Boyd season, which is, you know, somewhere that wide receiver 3 range. You know, it's not, you know, when it doesn't happen for him, it's what you get. It's like the 4 catches, 40 yards, and no touchdown, and that's just the what it is. So I don't know. It's kind of more of the same. Like, I think we're seeing what we expected from Tyler Boyd. I don't think you can downgrade him a week after he had 100-plus yards. I know T. Higgins, is back, but there was no Higgins. But it's not like he hasn't had good games with both of those guys this year.
I think they'll downgrade him to the last 2 weeks, I would say yes. Downgrading him from the beginning of the season, that's what the thought was heading to, at least from my side of it, and this is going to be like, haha, I was right. It's just Tyler Boyd was the odd man out. He was the 3rd one. He's the 3rd one with Joe Mixon in the backfield. That's going to be productive, and then T. Higgins and Chase are the 1-2. Boom, boom. So Boyd is a wide receiver 4, but if you expected more than that just because of the last 2 games, which I'm not saying that's what Funston's saying, but if you expected because while Higgins was out that all of a sudden Boyd was back to being a wide receiver 2, then yeah, you downgrade him. If you expected, like, look, this is what's going to happen if one is missing and understand that, then yeah, that's exactly where he is. He should be in the wide receiver 4 conversation.
Yeah, I think the point that we forgot to make here really quickly is that the passing volume is way lower than we expected to begin with. So, I mean, all of these guys might be getting squeezed in terms of volume and maybe
except
impacting Boyd. Yeah, except for Chase. Exactly. Yeah.
The two games in which all these guys have been healthy at the start and the end of the games is week one and then yesterday against the Packers. Tyler Boyd's got 7 catches, 9 targets, and 56 yards. So it feels safe to say that he is the third of three in the pecking order when all three of him, Jamar Chase, and T. Higgins are healthy.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, guys, let's get on to another topic here. I want to ask you guys a simple question. Give me your answer. Jake, you're up first. Who won week 5? Player, team, whatever. Who's the winner? Who's the big winner in week 5?
There's a lot. It's the Bills' skill players, except, I mean, there's actually technically a loss in here as well. If you want to say Cole Beasley is the one that's lost because he's losing snaps. But what came to my mind in this game is that Emmanuel Sanders has looked great. And officially in the circle of trust, and what it comes down to is this is where I say he's the winner because I can't believe I'm saying this. Although, that being said, I was the person who's like, hey, I'll take a 10th round flyer on him. I wasn't expecting to say I ever did trust this person, though. I now trust Zach Moss. He's just out there a lot and being used in the passing game. That's really what it comes down to. Is the reason I said the 10th round flyer, to be clear on Zach Moss, is because, like, hey, look, can take some touches at the goal line. Possibly Josh Allen doesn't run as much all the time, and you get an RB3 out of it. But if he's going to be getting this kind of work where he's getting targets and receptions and being trusted in the Devin Singletary role, who's Devin Singletary is not completely gone, but if you're going to give him 15 touches a week, including the passing game work, he's now fringy RB. He's the low end RB2, and I can't believe I said that. That's why he wins to me.
Yeah. I would say, yeah, Zach Moss, Emmanuel Sanders, another great game.
Dawson Knox, he's a winner too.
Let me follow up really quickly
on Zach Moss in the passing game. Just to quickly make a point.
Yeah,
on that.
Go ahead.
Most of those plays that Zach Moss made in the passing game would have been better plays if Devin Singletary had the ball in his hands. He doesn't have a whole lot of imagination when he gets the ball in the open field. And I think
he's Tevin Coleman.
But yeah, but hey, who can argue with what he did? He had a nice game, and if that continues, it's going to be nice for fantasy managers for sure. Go ahead, Michael.
Before we get to Funston's winner, Jake, how about this question here from Alex watching us on YouTube? Diggs? Is he in the loss category? Fly along with what he is? 2 catches yesterday in a game where Josh Allen threw for 300 something yards.
What is he going to catch 7 every single week? So we're upset by the fact that he put up. He almost had a touchdown. If he didn't get turned around, kind of wondering where the defender was. He was looking for the defender, and if he would have just turned and ran to the side,
if he would have sprinted, he scores.
It would have been a Jamar Chase day. It's for everybody out there. I'm buying Diggs everywhere I can. I don't understand how people are coming away from this upset with Diggs.
All right, Funston, give us your Week 5 winner. Who you got?
Oh, I will go with Kadarius Toney. Go with the chalk choice here. He looked great, and he looked great with both quarterbacks. Mike Glennon come, and I'm curious to see what the overall where he lined up, count was. But I was watching the game, and he was outside plenty, and so it wasn't all just straight out of the slot. I think the Giants are now going to have to figure out, is it Darius Slayton that's basically coming off the bench at this point, when Sterling Shepard and Slayton are back. But I also have a feeling that the way the Giants season is going, all these guys are not going to be healthy at the same time anyway, so it might not matter. They're going to figure
Giants
out.
Classic
Giants season. Although Kadarius Toney tried to, take away a little bit of his victory at the end there with the punch, and he's got a little bit of an ankle injury, so it's not a clean win for him, but I would say he's a winner.
Let's use that to launch into the waiver wire, and sorry, Jake, you can talk about Kadarius Toney as well, but Devontae Booker, is he the guy to be going after on the waiver wire? If you can only make one claim and one claim only, is he at the top of the list?
No.
Who is?
Aren't they saying it's only like a week for Barkley potentially? Even though his ankle was the size of a bowling ball.
Yeah,
I hope it's two. Honestly, because I want him to be 100%. Like I hope they don't force him back because he wants to come. Remember two years ago? Remember 2019 where he forced his way to come back early? No, because that's why it's Devontae Booker. It's Devontae Booker maybe for 2 weeks. You have potential. We don't know what's going on with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but if he's out, put it this way. Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Saquon Barkley are both out for 2 weeks. I'm taking Daryl Williams, even though McKinnon's going to be involved, because here's the other factor. Who do the Giants play this week? The Rams. Who's at quarterback? Likely Mike Glennon. I am taking anybody I possibly can over Devontae Booker for 2 weeks and what this offense is right now. By the way, for your question, Funston, is Kadarius Toney lined out wide 67% of the time in that game?
Yeah, that's what I was noticing. I was like, I was trying to, because I was also going against him in a fantasy league, so I was very in tune. I did not want him to catch the ball, and that wasn't working out well for me, but I noticed he was out wide a lot.
Only 11 in the slot. Kyle Rudolph and Evan Ingram had more slot routes and positioning than he did.
Yeah.
All right, so if Devontae Booker is not the first guy you're going after, not the guy who you're putting the most fab on this week, who is it, Jake?
I said Daryl Williams.
He's the number one for you?
I mean, assuming that, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is missing time, because I'm just going to take anybody in that backfield. And I do think Jerick McKinnon will get mixed in. I mean, we saw that when Edwards-Helaire left that game. But put it this way, if Clyde Edwards-Helaire is fine, although that knee limp to the locker room did not look good. Yeah. I would say it could go, put it this way, the running backs could go three different directions. If all of them are out, if Carson, Barkley, and Edwards-Helaire are all out, I would go Williams, Collins, Booker.
Collins,
If one of them comes back, it's going to shuffle it.
Right. Funston, who's your top target on the wire this week?
It's Williams as well, I think. And, obviously we'll have to wait and see, but it seems like Helaire is probably missing a week, if not
seems
more.
Like
At the least. And hopefully it's not terrible, terrible news for him, but it could be a while. So I'm in on Williams as well.
Where does Samaje Perine fit into this mix for you guys? Because, obviously, they had plenty of Joe Mixon in that game, and he scored a touchdown. It looked pretty good on that touchdown run, that little put his right foot in the ground and go, and that nice cut. So he looked healthy enough. But Perine looked good in his own right, 11 carries for 59 yards, had some involvement in the passing game. How does he fit into this mix for you, Funston?
I don't know that he would have played that much if Mixon was 100%. I guess you could kind of look at it as like a 1 week plug and play where Mixon might not still be 100%. You get Detroit this week and maybe you can get a similar kind of performance, but I think this is something that sort of starts to wane out a little bit and we see him kind of fade back into the woodwork as long as Mixon trends towards getting back to 100%. But I love seeing that Gio Bernard passed his Lando Calrissian mustache on to Samaje Perine because that thing is gold, man.
Someone's got to keep that alive in Cincinnati, so definitely good to see that. Jake, let me ask you this, since we're talking about, everyone would agree that it's those first backs we talked about. Then if you're still looking at backs, Samaje Perine would be probably in that next tier. Is Khalil Herbert in that next tier as well, seeing the way that he split the backfield in Chicago? And so, I know you have other stuff to talk about with the Bears. Save that for a little later when it gets brought up. But just strictly on Herbert and Damian Williams without David Montgomery, is Herbert in that group with Samaje Perine in the waiver claims this week?
More so the Perine. And I'll take the chance on him over Perine because Joe Mixon didn't practice the entire week. You just said it. Yeah. He just didn't practice the entire week and looked fine. Like the usage was supremely concerning because until that touchdown, we're like, oh my God, why did they even roll him out? Like the Washington team with Curtis Samuel. Like, why did you do this? Like, why? Right. But then he makes that cut. And it's just like, is there anything wrong with Joe Mixon? So you could say that they were up 14 to what was it? 3 or 6 at the half and maybe
the Bears.
Yeah.
14-3 at halftime.
So, you could say, okay, they had the second half lead, and maybe that's why Herbert got more involved. Whatever it might be, maybe he doesn't get a 50-50 split. Actually, Herbert out-snapped him, out-touched him in the backfield for carries. So maybe that doesn't happen, but I think it looks like it's at least a 60-40. You can't see what Herbert just did and ignore that. And let's also remember the whole situation with him in college and Puka Williams is like they were both so good. Now, I know Puka Williams is irrelevant, but so good that he left and went bananas for Virginia Tech. Like that was part of the read. Like he is a really good running back. So I would say yes, he's in the conversation because if Damian Williams gets dinged up, even like just banged up, like not necessarily misses games, but gets dinged up between now and when David Montgomery comes back, Herbert could just end up being the lead between the two.
Funston, Marquez Callaway back in your life? You can talk about Herbert.
They're on a bye. Michael Thomas is coming back. Sorry, Funston, go ahead.
Callaway keeps scoring these like very highly improbable, you know, like, touchdowns.
End
I don't know
half,
what to make
Hail
of it.
Mary touchdowns.
Yes,
you're not going to
exactly.
bank on that.
Well, and remember the one before that was Jameis doing his old school Tampa, just like chuck it and F it kind of throw, you know, into the back of the end zone, and Callaway just happened to grab. So yeah, I'm not, you know, I'm not banking on anybody. Honestly, I'm not sure I don't like Deontay Harris as much as Callaway there. He keeps making plays, but, I'm wondering on Herbert, like, I feel like I agree that there's like a, some kind of a split there. Damian Williams is 29 years old. They probably don't want to give him the full Montgomery workload. And honestly, Montgomery's 3 years in.
I thought you were going to say the full Monty. Sorry.
The full Monty. I love that. That's great. They got to start thinking about maybe developing Herbert as their guy for the future. Like if Montgomery comes up and they don't, you know, and they don't want to extend him, then you got Khalil Herbert ready to go at that point. So I think it behooves them to give them like a 40% split. Yeah. What's that?
I said my dynasty teams would love that. I have a lot of Khalil Herbert because I look for the talent situation. Yeah. You just pointed out like that was a sneaky backfield to look at the next man up in the future.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And this was something that Kevin Fishbane, who covers the Bears for us at The Athletic, hinted at last week, that Williams was going to be the main back, but that Herbert was going to have a larger role as the two than Williams did as the two to Montgomery. And so it shouldn't be a huge surprise to see Herbert as involved as he was. Really quick before we leave the waiver wire discussion behind, Dan Arnold, David Njoku, if you're tight end hunting, are either of those guys popping up on your radar, Jake?
Hopefully you went after Schultz and Knox and you don't have to deal with this.
Let's just say you didn't, though. Let's say you didn't and you're still hunting.
Come on, let's give Dan Arnold some props here. The guy's looking
good.
Wait,
but why? He had a touchdown that could have been his that didn't go to
him. Yeah, but he got 8 targets and he was like there for 3 days.
64 yards?
And he had a couple nice catches in his first game.
It could have been so much more. That's where I'm going. But yeah, I think it would be Dan Arnold they traded for him. We talked about him last week. Funston, yeah, we're on the same page. I like Dan Arnold too. That's why I had him in a DFS lineup. I had Dan Arnold there for the price. And Njoku, I would love it if they still didn't have Austin Hooper and whether or not he's active any given week, Bryant still being in the mix. And it's still, look, what are we talking about here with this offense? Would Baker throw for 300 yards with a billion attempts and still people are getting left out? Like, Odell Beckham got left out.
Three targets for Odell Beckham. In
I was honestly wondering if I missed missed like a game day scratch for Odell. I was like watching that game, wondering where he
and
was.
And that's the thing. It's like, it's the same problem with the Browns passing game. There is zero consistency for anybody outside
Maybe Landry when he's healthy.
That's what I was about to say. Unless Landry is healthy, Odell Beckham, the tight ends, Higgins, Donovan Peoples, there is zero consistency on this team. It's the Lions. Like, what's the difference between the Lions receiving options and the Browns? I mean, they're on the better offense,
but the Browns aren't good, any given week, it's a different person. Yeah. Yeah, right. You've got Chubb and you've got Hunt doing what they do in the backfield, which they did. I mean, what a game. That was an awesome game.
By the way, if you're going to keep giving me plus money on Kareem Hunt scoring a touchdown every single week, like at this point, I'm going to keep betting it.
You've got to keep on taking it. Now the Browns have already, their losses are to the Chargers and Chiefs, both on the road. No shame in that at all. They've got a couple of good wins on their schedule. Now this week they get the Cardinals. Like, what a brutal
Denver and Pittsburgh after that.
It softens up after that, doesn't it? It does, yeah. But they could be like, if they lose to the Cardinals in a good game, they could be like the best 3-3 team. That's a schedule you've got the rest of the season.
Oh. I joked about that. Oh, well, you were out when I said, I was like, he's got the schedule behind him. I mean, I'm looking at the rest of their schedule. After the Cardinals, there's Broncos, Steelers, Bengals, Patriots, Lions, Ravens. What the hell?
Raiders,
Packers, Steelers, Bengals. Like, their schedule the rest of the season isn't, I mean, at Packers isn't pretty on Christmas, by the way. That would be a fun game. But they could easily, finish with 12 wins still?
They could go from like 3-3 to 10-3, just like that. Certainly, with that schedule. But that's sort of an aside to what we're talking about. Let's get on to another guy who I want to talk about here. Adam Thielen, you guys. I mean, what's the deal with Adam Thielen? Is he just a touchdown or bust player, Funston?
It kind of was last year, too. I mean, he was the guy that was scoring all the touchdowns, but the yards were, you know, we're way down, and it's really just kind of a continuation of that. I don't know what to say. He does have the 4 touchdowns. He is wide receiver 18. I mean, if you expected him to be a, you know, compiler, a yardage compiler in this offense, that's Justin Jefferson, and it's like, you know, this isn't not that far of a different kind of offense than the Browns, other than that there's more consistency with the receivers. But the role for Thielen is that, you know, Cousins going to look for him in the red zone. And between the 20 is going to be a lot more of Justin Jefferson. I don't think I'm that surprised with how things have played out there.
Yeah, last 4 weeks for him. Let me jump in here, Jake. Last 4 weeks for him, 39 yards, 50 yards, 46 yards, 40 yards. I mean, depending on the way your roster is made up, is there an argument for sitting him down, Jake?
I would never sit him just because he, at worst case scenario, is wide receiver 4, because the difference between him and another wide receiver is just a bit of yardage, and that's Tyler Lockett. They're the same guy. Like, they go up and down, up and down, up and down. DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett are their version of Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen. The difference between it is Justin Jefferson's above DK, DK, Lockett, and then Thielen. So they actually bookend the Seattle guys. Sure. But Thielen and Lockett are very similar. And the only difference is that Thielen doesn't get the 100-yard games. He gets the 200, he gets the 2 touchdown games. He gets the touchdown game. But they both get 30 yards, 40 yards, 30 yards, and then, you know, well, Thielen will get 80 and 2 touchdowns. Lockett will get 120 and 2 touchdowns. But that's really the difference. At the end of the season, their stat lines are pretty similar. It's just that Lockett's got more yardage to boost him, and that's why we treat Lockett as a wide receiver 2, maybe 3 at worst, whereas Thielen's a wide receiver 3. Not, I'd still, I don't know, I wouldn't even put him down as a wide receiver 4. He's still a wide receiver 3.
Funston, you feel the same way? You're probably not benching Thielen unless you're very deep at this position?
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, I will. This is the only week, this is the first week that you wouldn't be happy, that you're not happy with the volume. He only had 3 targets. Like every other week, I believe it was 7+. So as long as I'm seeing that, even plus. If I'm seeing the inconsistency, I'm fine, because I know that's going to work out, and more, typically it's been more often than not.
But just blame Alexander Madison for going bananas. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, just doing the Dalvin Cook thing, just with a different name attached to it. And man, I mean, so I deliberately, like, it felt like a week where finally there was going to be some survivor hell to pay. And the one team I pegged was the Vikings. Like, stay away from the Vikings. Let's hope for the Lions to do it. And
close.
I was so excited for like 30 seconds.
We almost knocked them out. We almost knocked the Patriots out.
Right?
What was the other one?
We were this close to knocking out 40% of pools, and then the Vikings win, the Patriots win, and that's it.
I'm trying to remember. There was another close one. I don't remember what it was, though.
Another close, big survivor one?
Yeah, another close team. It was the Patriots, Vikings, and there was another one. It wasn't like at that level.
But it was like the Bucks and the Bucks, Cowboys, and Ravens are the
three next. All the people that tried to get cute with the morning game. Those people.
yeah, there you go. There you go. So, well, hey, speaking of the morning game, how about Michael Carter, you guys? Is he entering the RB2 discussion? Not the most efficient game for him in London against the Falcons, but he did score a touchdown. He had 10 carries. Ty Johnson and Tevin Coleman combined for 7 carries. He also had 3 targets, caught them all for 20 yards. We've been talking about this for a couple of weeks now, Jake. Is he now, with that seemingly having at least the plurality, if not a majority, of the touches coming out of that backfield in New York, is he in this RB2 discussion going forward?
No, because they still, I would love it to be, but it's still been that slow burn, similar to Javonte Williams. It's been that slow burn. But just really what it comes down to is they still keep using Ty Johnson.
I wish.
And that's really what it comes, like I said, that's really what it comes down to. Again, it's looking appealing. I want Carter over Ty Johnson. I want Carter over some other RB3s. But he's on the heels of RB2, but the Jets are part of the problem too. The offensive line and that offense in general is part of it. You put that split, you take Ty Johnson and Michael Carter off that team and put them on 10 different other teams, and I would say that's fine. Give me that split. I'll take him as an RB. Put him on the Broncos. Switch those two backfields, and I would take Michael Carter as a locked-in RB2. It just has to do with a few mitigating factors.
Yeah, I mean, I like the way things are going, but RB2 is a little strong. It's top 24. You know, I'm seeing him like 25 to 30 to 31, 32 range. The one thing is this is the first week of buys. So now he's probably a regular flex flyer kind of guy that you put in there, but still haven't seen the big, we still haven't seen the really big breakout game, and it was annoying watching Ty Johnson come in on the same drive in which Carter was in there, and they pulled him out, and Johnson gets the touchdown. That was annoying to see for a guy who had Carter in a lineup or two.
Funston, yesterday in the morning in our start-sit chat right here on YouTube, catches every Sunday morning, we were talking about that morass of running backs that were all, you could have ranked really any of them anywhere between RB23 and RB29, guys like Mike Davis and Latavius Murray and Alex Collins. Is that where Michael Carter sits for you?
I think so, yeah. I mean, yeah, now we can put Myles Gaskin maybe back in there as well. It was his 10 catches. He was seen
as falling. Yeah, you're going to bank on 10 catches for 74 yards.
He officially re-enters the morass. Yeah, I call it the kind of like that RB dead zone where you're just, you know, you're throwing darts and flipping coins on these guys, but I would say that's fair. Put him right
there. Let's hit a guy who was once in that morass, maybe even beneath that, and now has seemingly elevated himself above it. Leonard Fournette, you guys, is this can we do it? Can we buy it?
So I'm funny that you said this because I set this up on the All In Football show with Meanie. And I set it up for him, and I said I can't believe not only did I say I used the word trust with Zach Moss, I'm actually using the word trust with Leonard Fournette as well. And that's how I set it up, because really what it comes down to is we've never trusted Bruce Arians, and I didn't mess around with his entire backfield. Funston knows this is where I came up with like the Patriots games last year. It was like, I'm not doing Fournette because next week it's Ronald Jones, and then it's Ronald Jones, and then you start him, and then it's not, and it's somebody else, and then it's back to Fournette. And like, that's what, because you're always chasing the production. Yep. The difference here is because of Ronald Jones' struggles, it's somewhat forced Arians' hand. And Fournette has looked like playoff Lenny, you know, Lombardi, whatever the hell you want to call him. He's carried
Lombardi Lenny, I like that.
Yeah, I credit to whoever was calling that game yesterday. That's the one. They're the ones that said it. But that's really what it comes down to, is that he's carried over that success, and it's helped the fact that Ronald Jones has struggled and Gio missed a little bit of time. Gio's still a little bit of a thorn in the side, but it's similar to Zach Moss. 60-65% of the snaps is trustworthy, because there's not a lot of backfields that give that much. We want the 70-80%, but 60 plus is valuable, especially on the Bucs. So yeah, I locked in, can't believe I'm saying it, locked in RB2,
locked
top 20
in.
Yeah,
Funston, same page.
I mean, it's 2 weeks in a row of like massive volume, and 1 week, you know, with Gio, with everybody back, you know. So yeah, I think, much as I hate to say it,
I was pulling it up. He's 17th on the year in snap percentage for running backs, and that's one behind Patrick Ricard, who we don't really count because basically a fullback. So he's technically 16th.
Yeah. And I mean, a minimum of 24 receiving yards per game, a minimum of 3 catches over these last 2 weeks, 7 catches on 10 targets for 90 yards, 32 carries, 159 yards, and a touchdown on the ground. I mean,
and
70, I know
70%
we're always
of his snaps
to trust
are coming
it.
In the passing game. That's it's for him to stay out there. That's with Gio. That's a lot.
Yeah, people, if you bought in, or if you took the shot on Leonard Fournette, you are feeling very good, because he was, what, like RB 30-ish, 35-ish
at
by
least.
ADP, right? Somewhere in there.
Yeah.
And now he's looking like someone who you can absolutely trust as a top 20 running back. And not only that, guys, no one needs me to tell you this, but a top 20 running back in an excellent, excellent offense that is always going to give him chances to score. So right now, Leonard Fournette,
I heard the Bucks are pretty good.
One of the real big winners of this fantasy football season. All right, guys, really quick here, I want to run through some buy or sell candidates for you. Let's just ping pong these back and forth. So you're each going to get to take one. We're just going to fly through 4 guys here. All of them are wide receivers. One of them has got a little bit of a slash to him as well. Jake, why don't you take this first? Cortland Sutton coming off a big game against Pittsburgh. Buy or sell?
Victor Alex Bernstein, who's still watching this show, asked me to victory lap on the other show because I bye on Cortland Sutton and said this is your second opportunity after the it was technically the third opportunity, but now he's a potential sell if you can get top 20. That might be difficult to get, but Jerry Judy's coming back, which can just potentially cluster things up a little bit, but as it stands, I'm still buying as what I considered him to be as a wide receiver too. I think he's actually very much in the vein of a cross between Tyler Lockett and Adam Thielen.
Let's see Phil also in on this. Why did Sutton have to trick us with his ankle? Why did he have to do it? I had a horrible decision to make between Sutton and Deontay Johnson. And like 1:02 p.m. Eastern time. I was like, boom, right choice, nailed it. And then Deontay didn't catch a pass, or one pass the rest of the game. So Sutton coming through with a big game. Brandon, buy or sell A.J. Brown?
I think you got to buy. Look at what's changed there. It's Derrick Henry's offense, you know, and playing off of the play action will work for A.J. Brown. He's just got to get back to full health. Julio Jones being there, I think it's not going to be a bad thing if he ever gets back there. But either way, we know what A.J. Brown is in this offense. I don't think that they're planning to make any significant changes. So what he's done in the past is still on the table for him. And right now you get him at a discount for sure.
I actually want to hear from both you guys on this next one. Jake, you take it first. Cordarrelle Patterson, with what we're seeing from his role, really sticking in Atlanta. Buy or sell?
Just hold your stock. You can't be, the problem is you need to sell him for like an RB2 value, but nobody's paying that.
And who's going to do that?
Yeah, and everybody's like, everybody knows. I will say maybe out there, the 5%, because people always say, not my league. And I've seen some of the trade questions come in. There was one last week. I think Joe Pizzapia was tagged on it too. And they're like, should I trade Cordarrelle Patterson for Dalvin Cook, even though he's hurt? And it's like, so there are maybe like a slim percent chance that you're out there. And if you can, obviously, if you get anywhere close to top 15 running back value, you sell him because it's not going to continue, especially when everybody's healthy and they're coming out of their bye with Calvin Ridley. The problem is most people aren't. So you just kind of hold and enjoy it if you can't.
Yeah, I'm that boat. You're selling him right now if you can capitalize on the hype at the moment. But, you know, what you're noticing is it. He kind of gets this, you know, before this week, he kind of gets a similar kind of yardage, and it's whether he scores a touchdown or not that really makes a big difference. But, you know, I was saying before this week, he was kind of like a slightly upgraded version of Tony Pollard, but they kind of had a similar role, you know, and they're kind of getting a similar amount of snaps. And when Calvin Ridley's back, we'll see if he reverts back, but this was his season high in snaps, and yeah, she's been good, so I don't think it's going to probably go down. So I think we will see a better version of him. But I just think the hype's too much right now, and he's going for too much on the open market.
Funston, in a league where you have Cordarrelle Patterson and you want to unload him, you want to try to sell at what is almost certainly going to be a high point, where are you going? Are you like going and searching Saquon Barkley and seeing who has him and hitting up that person first?
It's just like Jake said, it's like if people are going to get crazy because the Dalvin Cooks are out and people like that, you just have to have a little bit of patience on, you know, or, you know, a Joe Mixon that is not 100%. And so his workload was down. People aren't just like, you know, completely clued in to what's going on with some of these guys. Sure. Take advantage if you can. Absolutely.
This is another great illustration of it, because I know we're all going to be on the same page when I pull up this question from KHertz11. Patterson for A.J. Brown.
Brown.
I mean, just smash. Absolutely, yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yes. You want A.J. Brown in this.
Yes.
And that's that. I mean, that's the crazy stuff that we're getting into with Cordarrelle Patterson.
So the question
I was surprised
is,
to see him still use
fair,
so much as a running back.
Is this a fair need for need, though, if Cordarrelle Patterson has running back eligibility? I mean, given how kind of...
I don't care. Much, I'll figure it out somewhere else.
I'm with Jake on that. Like, I would... I'm not giving up A.J. Brown for Cordarrelle Patterson in any way. There's no way I'm doing it. I understand where you're coming from, Funston.
Yeah.
I was surprised how much he was used as a traditional running back still yesterday. I thought with those two receivers, with Ridley and Gage out, that we would see him a lot more as wide receiver. Not only.
Yeah.
You know,
no, but, I agree. Yeah, I thought he was going to be a lot more of a traditional wide receiver, you know, and kind of filling that role. But, he was a lot of running back.
Part of the reason why I felt so comfortable starting Mike Davis was I thought he would really own that backfield. And, thank God for that touchdown late. I'll just say that.
I thought he was going to get banished. I mean, he had that fumble. It was brutal. I thought he...
Fumble like he was shot out of a rocket.
I texted a fan. It was like, nice knowing you, Mike Davis. And then he was back out there the next series. I couldn't believe it.
Well, and if that's the testament of the people that are thinking Wayne Gallman's going to take his job, I think that solidified any concern. He's still only an RB3, but at least you feel better about the RB3.
You certainly do. Let's get one more guy in here. You know, we got time. Let's have both you chime in on this one. Jake, what are you doing with Keenan Allen, who has a very comfortable floor, but we haven't seen any, you know, big games from him since early on in the season?
You asked 10 people who played fantasy last year and didn't have Keenan Allen on their team, and I'd guess at least half of them would say he had over 1,000 yards last year. He didn't. And you know what? That's fine, though. But that's what it really comes down to is the perception of Keenan Allen. He is a half and full point PPR wide receiver two, maybe gets to wide receiver one if Herbert keeps playing to this level, which, of course, in week five. That was fun facing Herbert and Mike Williams in my league, by the way. That was real fun. Thank you for that. I mean, I'm being outscored like 180 to 90 before the final game even plays. So, but what it comes down to is, yeah, Keenan Allen, wide receiver two. The perception is disappointment, but it's similar to a lot of disappointments from the other. Like Robert Woods. No, I'm not saying he's going to have the Robert Woods game, but that's still within his realm of possibilities. Keenan Allen, any given week, could have 10 catches for 120 yards. But that's the kind of receiver he is. So it's just like Robert Woods, bye, because he can still have value despite being a disappointment.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's on pace for well over 100 catches right now. And, you know, the thing is right, Justin Herbert's been so good and Mike Williams has been so much better than he was last year that I'm sure that there's some touchdowns that maybe Keenan Allen would have scored this year if it was last year's version of this offense. Mm-hmm. But Mike Williams has stepped up. He's become a big-time touchdown scoring guy as well. Keenan Allen, if you watch that game, he left a few points on the table as well. He had drops that hurt his overall numbers, but 6 for 75 with no touchdown. It's a pretty classic Keenan Allen kind of game.
I mean, I'm building up the fact that the last 3 weeks have been 50, 36, and 75 yards for him, because if you look at the full season, 13, 8, 12, 11, and 9, those are his targets by week in this offense with Justin Herbert. You definitely want Keenan Allen on your team. Like Jake said, low end one, high end two, have those realistic expectations for him, but definitely,
you know,
someone
who
is he?
He's other Julian than Keenan Edelman. Allen. Julian Edelman.
It's like peak Julian Edelman.
Yeah. You know what his unrealized air yards was this week? 2. Because he's Julian Edelman. No, that's I'm just saying, like, I think that's...
No, it's funny. I know it's true. It's still funny.
Edelman was finishing 15, 18 wide receiver year after year after year. He's Edelman now.
How is that 2, though? I saw him have a drop, and he caught a catch right after that and threw the ball.
Because
like,
unrealized air yards are like...
Doesn't include drops.
Oh, okay.
That's on the receiver.
Okay.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Number one this week was Terry McLaurin, by the way.
In unrealized air yards?
117 left on the field.
Because Taylor Heineke is not that good, man.
I was going to say, sometimes the dial being on aggressive level 10, Heineke, just dial it back to 8 even. You don't have to be aggressive 10 every single play.
That might be a familiar theme for Terry McLaurin until and unless Ryan Fitzpatrick
Week
is
7.
Back on the field for Washington. Hey, guys, let's look at the opposite of a question we talked about a little earlier. Funston, who lost Week 5?
Oh, who did I put down? I put down, I was trying to remember. The Jaguars.
Florida.
Received, yeah.
There you go.
Jaguars 1 and 2. I started with Laviska Shenault, but then I was like, you know what? Marvin Jones, too. He hasn't been doing anything lately. I thought Laviska specifically, because last week he had a bunch of volume. We were like, okay, now DJ Chark's out. They've used him away from the line of scrimmage in this game as well. Things are going to open up for him. He's going to become consistent, because that's what we always were bothered by him, was like, one game good, go away for 2 games, one game good. Oh, yeah, it reminds us how talented he is. But how, in a game where you're trailing pretty much from the beginning, do you get one catch? And same with Marvin Jones, and they were targeted. Well, Marvin had like 3, I guess, but they were targeted 8 times. That's combined what Dan Arnold had. Agnew, I'm forgetting his first name. Is it Jamal Agnew? Jamal Agnew and Tavon Austin were your target leaders at wide receiver? Or is Agnew even is he a running back? I don't even know.
Agnew's like, a wide receiver.
Who the hell is Trevor Lawrence targeting? Why was he not targeting Laviska Shenault and Marvin Jones? I just didn't understand that at all. So I thought that those two receivers the first week without DJ Chark were losers in the fact that there was a perfect setup for him.
So Shenault had fewer snap percentages than James Robinson, Marvin Jones, Hollister, Agnew, Arnold, Hyde, and Austin. Oh, by the way, he was only ahead of Manhurts. I made a face when
gross.
You said that, because I tweeted this out, Funston, yesterday. I said, who would you rather, Kristen Michael or Laviska Shenault? But the point behind it is that we as fantasy people, we see how talented Shenault is, and we want more, and sometimes the coaches just reflect me how many times, like Shanahan with Ayuk, like, we haven't figured out the spat. Is he still not healthy? But he's not letting him get on the field. It's one of these things where, like, we're sitting here like wondering what the hell is going on. So I'm with you. Shenault's a giant loser for me. I think the bigger loser overall, not bigger necessarily, on the same page, is just the passing game for the Bears. just all like, you know, I love Justin Fields, but they are still giving him a limited playbook. But the bigger fact is why I'm going to pull Justin Fields into this, because it's Fields, Allen Robinson, and Mooney. The big arm could help Mooney like we just saw last week, but this is the downside when Justin Fields is not going to throw the ball. By the way, who had the same amount as passing yards as Kyle Pitts had receiving yards on his own, the entire Bears team, the same amount of yards. Devontae Adams in one half had 117 yards. The Bears offense had 119.
Justin Jefferson? Did Justin Jefferson beat him in one half?
Oh, he beat him. I was thinking about the people like are super close to him. But,
yeah,
I mean, in one half, Kadarius Toney almost had it. That's how close it came.
I think Jefferson was like, didn't Jefferson have like 117 yards in the first half against Detroit? Something
did
like
he?
That.
I didn't see that. It was close to that.
Maybe 107.
Point
it was something
being,
close.
Fields isn't throwing a lot, which is, again, that's on the Bears. They're limiting the playbook. As he, like, he's a rookie. He admits he doesn't see the pocket presence that well so far. He said that coming out of college. And I understand a limited playbook, but the problem for him, too, is he's not running. I don't know why. But
three
if he's not
for 4 yards,
yeah,
yesterday.
If he's not going to run on top of it, he's not even fantasy relevant, and he's made Allen Robinson and Darnell Mooney wide receiver fours, both of them.
Yeah, Salfino said that in his scouting notebook. He's like, you can't have a quarterback on a team that throws a third of the time and he doesn't run. Like, that just doesn't work.
Lance had 16 attempts yesterday. That's what he should be doing if he's not going to be throwing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And you can argue that they ran Lance too much, like designed runs. But that's basically there. When you watch Lance throw, you're like, well, let's just go ahead and take our chances with him running.
Part of him, it was him too. And Lance needs to get the Cam Newton out of his head before he's already taking shots in his first start like that.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, guys, let's wrap up the show by looking at a group of other potential losers. Not saying they necessarily lost week five, but maybe reasons to be a little bit concerned. I want to start with Damian Harris. Looked fine when he was in the game. Scored a touchdown, was about that close to his second touchdown. Then he fumbled. Then they said he was out with a rib injury. Didn't touch the ball the rest of the game. Ramondre Stevenson active for the first time this week. Got 11 carries. Didn't do a ton with him. Jake, on a scale of one being starting him next week, no question about it, to 10 being Belichick's going to totally screw this, where are you on Damian Harris?
I was trying to figure, like, you went the opposite direction with the scale than I thought he was. I said, still a three. He was banged up, and then he still got back in there a little bit, and Stevenson, you know, had his own issues, and Stevenson has had his own issues this year, and Stevenson is a powerful LeGarrette Blunt-like mold, but that's also, he's not going to be used much in the passing game, and Damian Harris gives him that opportunity. As we just saw the week before with J.J. Taylor when he fumbled, and then Damian Harris was out there the most of all running backs after James White in the passing game. So I'm not that worried. I think it just has to do with a little bit banged up and injury situation. As long as he's healthy, a three. And the three is only because of the injury.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, he's the best running back with some institutional knowledge there. I mean, you don't like the fumble, but are we sure? How do they overrule that? There was nothing there that showed that should have been overruled.
Especially with their supposed emphasis on keeping things called on the field.
Yeah.
I was very surprised by that one.
I didn't get that one at all. I would have liked to see him involved in the passing game this week, but he wasn't healthy. And, you know, I think that'll come. And with James White, you know, out, he's going to get some catches in this passing game for sure.
All right, let's look at the entirety of the San Francisco running game. And I'm including Trey Lance in this for as long as he is the team starter, because, I mean, this has been just a nightmare. And, you know, if Raheem Mostert were healthy, I don't think we'd be dealing with this, but he's not. And Elijah Mitchell, of course, gets the big week one, and then everyone blows 40% of fab on him, and now we just see him again in week five, and he takes back over as the primary runner, and Trey Sermon has a good game in week four, but then is not even seen in week five. One carry in that game. I mean, what can you start anyone with any level of confidence here, Funston? Is it just Trey Lance when he starts, and you got to ignore the backs?
Well, I mean, Elijah Mitchell is clearly the number one, and we never want to completely ignore the backfield for Kyle Shanahan. Now we know, is Trey Sermon, did he work his way into some kind of a, you know, somewhat of a platoon split? No, it's Elijah Mitchell. So there was an answer there. It wasn't like anybody got anything out of it, but like going forward, if you ever like the matchup, you ever like the setup, you know, it's Elijah Mitchell. So I guess he's an RB3, you know, it's. Whatever. I mean, we're going to have to use guys like that. Like I said, it's bye week. So guys like that are going to get thrown into the lineup. But Trey Sermon, you know, he's out.
Well, so I'll say no and double no, because so I was wrong about Trey Sermon thinking this would be like a 50-50, a nice compliment 1-2 punch. Why not use them both? Trey Sermon better with a quarterback, not under center. With Trey Lance, we just saw, you mentioned it, second half of that game, Trey Sermon looked great. Not good, looked great. He looked okay in week three, had some good runs, had some bad runs. The first half of week four, good and bad. With Trey Lance, looked great, period. No question about it. Shanahan doesn't like him. That's clear. But this is why I say yes and no. It's clear. If it's only Mitchell and Sermon, yes, it's clear. 100%. Sermon droppable, arguably, unless Mitchell were to get hurt. And it's Mitchell. However, they're on their bye, and Jeff Wilson's eligible to come back after the bye. I'm not saying yes because it still might be Jeff Wilson.
You know Jeff Wilson is scoring like 2 touchdowns. You know that week seven game, and Jeff Wilson's going to have like a 10 carry, like 6 carry, 23 yard, 2 touchdown sort of game is what Jeff Wilson's looking at in that return. And that right there is just a perfect summation of what I think we're going to be looking at with the San Francisco backfield the rest of the season, regardless of who the quarterback is. And that's going to do it, you guys, for this episode of the Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast. Thanks so much to everyone who joined us on YouTube. If you are not yet an Athletic subscriber, can still get 50% off. That deal's running out soon. It runs out in like 9 days, so do it while you can. TheAthletic.com/fantasyfootballpod. For Jake Seeley and Brandon Funston, I am Michael Beller. Thanks again for being with us on YouTube. Thanks for listening to us. If you need anything to go your way in Colts and Ravens later tonight, we certainly hope that happens for you. Thanks for listening. Talk to you soon.